This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotatonetwork.com.
Locutus.
Yes. I am Locutus of Borg.
Why are you here?
This is a primitive culture. I am here to facilitate its incorporation. Identify yourself.
Hugh.
Identify yourself.
We are Hugh.
This is not a Borg identification.
Third of five.
This culture will be assimilated.
They do not wish it.
Irrelevant.
They will resist us.
Resistance is futile.
Resistance is not futile. Some have escaped.
They will be found. It is inevitable. All will be assimilated.
Must Geordi be assimilated?
Yes.
He does not wish it. He would rather die than be assimilated.
Then he will die.
No. Geordi must not die. Geordi is a friend.
You will assist us to assimilate this vessel. You are Borg. You will assist us.
I will not.
What did you say?
I will not assist you.
I?
Geordi must not be assimilated.
But you are Borg.
No. I am Hugh.
Coming to you from the historic Cosmic Potato Studios, welcome to The Landing Party, a Star Trek after show. This is your place for detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek. We watch and review all of the new content coming from the small screen and the big screen, break down the plot, do a little nitpicking, and give our theories of what's to come. Now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Landing Party, a Star Trek after show. My name is Sean Ray, and tonight we will be continuing our Star Trek Picard retrospective, where we are watching and talking about several key episodes from Star Trek The Next Generation that we believe will have a bearing on what we'll see when Picard starts next month on CBS All Access. Tonight, we'll be discussing the Season 6 episode, I, Borg, as well as the two-part episode, Descent. We'll get into those in just a few minutes. But first, allow me to introduce tonight's panel. From Captain Game Show, we have John Irons.
Hi.
From the Quantum Leap Podcast, we have Christopher DeFilippis.
I am 3 of 8. That's the only Borg joke I got. Sorry.
And from the network formerly known as Infinite Diversity, we have Rick Tatro.
We are glad to be here.
Before we get into that, we started our last episode by talking about some Star Trek contributors that had passed away. Well, there is one other thing that died in the last few days, and that's the possibility of Quentin Tarantino directing a Star Trek film.
And there was much rejoicing.
I say the possibility. He was interviewed, and he said that he thinks he's stepping away, or he's moving away from Star Trek. I kind of knew that was eventually going to happen because Tarantino he's made 9 movies, but he's promised about 50 movies that never got made. So when he started saying, yeah, I'm going to make Star Trek, I kind of figured it was going to fizzle out eventually, but it kept going and it kept going. I was like, well, maybe this is actually going to happen, but no, it's not going to happen. Because he's always promised throughout his career, I'm only going to make 10 movies. I just want to make 10 movies and then I'll be done. And he's already made 9. So
that was a pretty good Tarantino, actually.
For me to think that, I'm only going to make 10 movies. 10 movies is all I'm going to make. Okay? Okay? Okay. But anyway,
Is that Tarantino
that was more,
or Trump?
That was okay. Okay. But to think that his 10th movie is going to be Star Trek, nah, he's not going to make his 10th movie so different from all the other stuff that he's made after he just made Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But so it looks like Rick got his wish.
I'll be honest with you, I really never had any illusions that it would happen. So it's just been fun pissing off Tarantino fans because I'm not.
Whatever story he came up with is still out there, so they may still make that story. It just won't be with him. So I don't know.
Just won't have as many f**ks in it.
I feel like it might
a lot. But I feel like a lot of this rumor, gossip sort of non-story started happening right around the time he was promoting Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And now that that movie is in the theaters and gone, all of a sudden he's stepping away from Star Trek. I think it was just another way to get like some oblique ink around, oh, this is what I'm doing now, but sure, I'd love to do Star Trek. Why not? And then this whole nonsense where I'm only ever going to direct 10 movies, just be it more of a fucking hipster poser douche. It's just like, why would you limit yourself to 10 movies? It just seems like an arbitrary, idiotic kind of thing. And yeah, I'm with Rick. I'm kind of glad that this is moved on. I like Tarantino as a filmmaker. I've enjoyed most, if not all, of his films that I've seen. Kill Bill Part 2, maybe not so much. But this to me just was arbitrary, out of the left field, and hopefully is now going away.
I kind of wanted him to do it.
I was interested to see what it was going to be.
Yeah, I'm generally a fan of his. I like probably most, like, you know, there aren't any of his films that I hate. There are some that I like better than others, but you know, aside from as a director, I think he's a really good writer. And I would be, because I know like other movies that he's written on that weren't, you know, in the Tarantino style. And so it was really just more, call it chaotic curiosity. Let's see what he would do with Star Trek.
No, go ahead and make a science fiction movie. I want to see what you could do with science fiction. I don't necessarily need to see you do Star Trek. But, all right. So this week we're going to discuss two episodes from The Next Generation that deal with the character of Hugh, otherwise known as Third of Five. Played by Jonathan Del Arco, he's confirmed as returning to the role in Star Trek Picard. So we're going to talk about Iborg, and we're going to talk about Descent Parts 1 and 2. Iborg was written by Rene Echevarria. Yeah, there you go. And directed by Robert Lederman. And the original air date was May 9th, 1992. The Enterprise finds a lone Borg drone separated from the collective and brings him on board. The drone begins to reassert his individuality, but his presence causes differing levels of fear and sympathy from various crew members. Before I watched this episode for this review, I probably haven't seen this episode in 20 years. I remember watching it around the time that First Contact came out, because the local station where I live was doing like a Borg marathon. So every night for a week or so, they were showing Borg episodes. I remember thinking this episode was okay, but it wasn't necessarily one of my favorites. But now, going back and watching it again, I think it's exceptional. I really like this episode. You know, there's a lot to like here. There's a lot of stuff to break down. There's a lot of character moments. There's a lot of moments between different characters that were very interesting. The whole the whole idea of Guinan kind of having to look at herself and her feelings, because Guinan hates the Borg, you know, but this Borg made her have to think about that a little bit. And she actually goes to Picard and says, this plan that you're thinking about doing is not right. Which, I mean, the plan is, for listeners, if you haven't seen the episode in a while, the plan is they want to take this Borg and they want to give him a virus and send him back to the collective and basically have him kill all the Borg with this virus. And so they're talking genocide, which is, it was kind of weird to hear Picard. I mean, I know Picard has issues with the Borg, and I know it's the Borg that we're talking about, but still, when you're talking about the genocide of an entire species, that's not really Star Trek. But what are your thoughts on Iborg as we get started, John?
I can't tell you the last time I saw this episode either. Like, I'm not one of the ones who, like, you know, rewatches episodes, you know, like every year. I've seen every episode multiple times, but, you know, not any recently. But this is one of the ones that I remembered. Like, there's a lot of Star Trek episodes where, like, I don't know a lot of the titles, you know, but I'm on Netflix. I watch it on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, what episode number is this? What season? And I'm scrolling through. And I was like, oh, I remember that one. Oh, I remember that one. Oh, I remember that one. So I think it's kind of a testament to the later seasons. it's kind of a testament to the quality of the show that even though I haven't seen them for years and years and years, like, I still remember, you know, what the plot is, like, kind of the major story beats, and often, but not always, the conclusion. All of that is to say, when I saw this episode, I pretty much remembered, like, everything about it, including that last final look from Hugh. And I agree, it is a really good episode. Like, and it reminded me of, frankly, it reminded me of why I liked The Next Generation and why I didn't like Voyager. what I saw of Voyager, to be fair. I haven't seen the whole series. But there's this central question, this moral dilemma, and various people weigh in with their valid opinions, and it's a real discussion. I mean, this isn't an action-packed episode. It's a lot of talking. It's a lot of talking and thinking and feeling. And that's what I love in my Star Trek is here's this question. Where do you stand? Where do you stand? Where do you stand? Where do you stand? How do we all move together forward somewhere? And this episode kind of embodied that.
Rick, what about you?
One thing as y'all have said, it's probably been a couple of decades since I watched this episode, but I watched it today to refresh my memory, and it is way better than I remembered it being. That's one of the reasons I haven't watched it in so long. I was like, oh, it's the one where they find the Borg, Hugh, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
an amazing episode. If only for the fact that it's a Geordi-centric episode, that he doesn't come off looking like an absolute idiot.
Yeah.
amazing character moments, especially with Guinan, especially with Picard. There's the great scene with Deanna and Jean-Luc, where he just totally shuts her down, and she's like, I want to kick your ass, but I can't. And so she, you know, it's one of the rare moments where she doesn't go, well, let's talk about how you feel about this, and then we'll, you know, she'll come out and there'll be chocolate sundaes and hugging. He just kind of says, you know, off, counselor, and she does. Sorry, I'm being a potty mouth again. There was not a bad beat in this episode. And it really expanded on the Borg. It showed how tenuous their grip is on their drones, how close to humanity they are, or Cardassianity, or Klingonanity, or whatever they happen to be.
I love the way this episode played out. I love the way it was written. I love the way it was acted. I have nothing bad to say about this episode.
Chris?
I'm going to agree in main with all three of you. I am not the biggest Next Gen fan. As a matter of fact, I'm probably the least Next Gen fan of this group. But this is an episode I always remembered, and it was mainly on the strength of Whoopi Goldberg's performance. I always liked Guinan as a character, but not having watched all of Next Gen and never really having been a fan, I've only seen her sporadically, and I really got to like her in Generations. Yes, I like Generations. I'm that guy. But seeing her in this, and especially the anger that she brought, and she wasn't just like the pithy quip machine behind the bar making little observations and then moving on. They gave her something to do here, and it was really something great. The only thing, if we can just talk about the ending a little bit, I remember not agreeing with their premise to bring a spark of humanity back to the Borg. Because I always thought whenever the Borg assimilate somebody, they are encountering and quelling that spark of humanity or Cardassianity or whatever, Klingonity. And it seemed misguided to me. And I wish the end of this episode had Guinan keeping her firm stand, saying, no, these are monsters. They destroyed my entire planet. You don't know. And this is just folly. You have a chance here to wipe out the biggest threat to not only the Federation, but to the Quadrant. And they went more in the sort of, and I guess this is what Trek is known for. They went more in the Trek direction of let's embrace the optimism and the humanity. And that's one of the things about Next Gen that always annoyed me the most, because the Big Bad Universe doesn't give a shit about the human condition or human ideals. So that's where I thought that the episode annoyed me most. But at the same time, it's one of the few Next Gen episodes that didn't bore me and that I really remember fondly.
I like the scene where Geordi is talking to Picard, and Geordi comes to Picard as his commanding officer, but also as somebody that he looks up to, looking for his advice, and says, I'm kind of having second thoughts about this. I don't know if this is right, what we're doing. And Picard basically says, too bad, stop talking to the Borg and do your job.
Chris, to your point, I think, yeah, they did leave it with this kind of air of optimism, which they kind of squash sufficiently when you go back to the Sith episode. I feel like it's interesting, the idea that Guinan would have like kind of stuck to her guns, but I felt like that, I can't say out of character, I think it would have been disappointing to me, because she seems like, you know, a character who's not, if not always wise, at least open-minded.
Right.
And it would have seemed uncharacteristically, and not that that would necessarily be like universe-breakingly uncharacteristic. I mean, she's a person, like everybody's got their blind spot. So I could have seen it, but I think I prefer the direction that they went with it. And as far as the dark side, the dark consequences of the decision, that's, you know, the other episodes that we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah.
I think that it wouldn't have even worked out. The way that Descent makes it look that it works out when he goes back and he's got this spark of humanity and all this individuality, the Borg would have just, like, they would have either wiped his memory and had him, like, start over, like, reboot him. Or they would have kicked him out of the collective. You know, they're not.
Well, they said, like, during the process, during the rebooting process, you know, you merge with all of them. So that's effectively what they did. But just in that moment when they all shared the sense of individuality is when the infection took place.
Yeah, but having taken several IT classes, you don't take a computer that may be infected and connect it to the network until you're sure everything's been wiped.
That's fair. I will say that having taken several IT classes would definitely make you an expert on the Borg.
yeah, I know.
I'll give the writers this. Hugh grew more in 45 minutes than Seven of Nine was allowed to grow in 4 seasons.
Yeah.
So
his eyepiece had a had that holographic sticker that you can get for 50 cents at Walmart.
it looked good in SD.
Yeah.
On a tube TV.
Was this the first time they did the I am this number designation?
Yeah, this was the first time. And he said I'm third of five, which they change it later to he would have said three of five if it had come later. But this time he said third of five. Because Seven of Nine didn't say she's seventh of nine. She says she's seven of nine, you know, things evolve. But I got some trivia things that I wrote down. The title is a reference to not only the Isaac Asimov story, I, Robot, but also specifically the Outer Limits episode, I, Robot, which was, based on that story.
Which starred in Nimoy.
Yeah. It had also, a similar...
I also always thought it was just kind of a play on Iborg, Cyborg.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but it had a similar story of a robot that believed to have they believe had evil intentions, but as the story progressed, he was discovered to be very human and have many human ideals. So
can I blow your mind for a second?
Sure thing.
There is no Asimov story titled I, Robot.
Is it not?
That's the title of the book, which is
of a collection.
A collection of stories, but there is no I, Robot story.
Oh, okay. So that Will Smith movie wasn't based on anything. It was
loosely based on it is a story, but I don't think it's called I, Robot. I could be wrong. I think
I have the book right here. Do you want me to look?
I haven't read any Asimov in probably 25 years. So
I have it somewhere in a box, probably.
While he's getting that, the Argolis cluster was later visited again by the Enterprise D in True Q and by the USS Defiant in the Deep Space Nine's episode Behind the Lines. A goof that they had was that when Riker was assembling his away team, he gets on the comm and he calls Dr. Crusher and orders her to bring a medical team to the transporter room. However, when they beam down, it's just Crusher, Worf, and Riker. There is no medical team.
Well, he didn't say they were all beaming down. He just told them to go to the transporter room.
Yeah, just go to the transporter room. And then we're going to leave your medical team standing there waiting for us. Chris has gone to withdraw a book from his library.
His vast collection.
Yeah.
Jinx. I said I remembered every major beat of this episode. And it's true, I did. But what I didn't remember was that when I recalled it before watching it again, I thought that Hugh had formed kind of a bond with both Geordi and Data. I remember them like kind of equally in my memory, but it's clearly Geordi.
It would have made sense for him to at least have a couple more conversations with Data.
And I think that's maybe why I remembered it that way, because it seemed like it would have fit.
Well, they'll do more of that in the next episode, and it doesn't go well.
Yeah.
So was I wrong?
What you got, Chris?
My Fawcett edition of iRobot.
Mm-hmm.
And the table of contents does not contain one story named iRobot. Introduction, Robbie, Runaround, Reason, Catch That Rabbit, Liar, Little Lost Robot, Escape, Evidence, and the Evitable Conflict, not the Inevitable Conflict. Mm-hmm. And one thing I didn't like about Asimov's robot stories is he set up the three laws of robotics merely a straw man to knock down in every story.
Yeah, so just to ignore that.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, right. I missed your whole other conversation because I was busy digging this book.
No, I just went over a couple more trivia items and a couple of production errors. But okay, so Descent. Part one was written by Jerry Taylor and Ronald D. Moore. Part two was written by Renee Echeverria.
Echeverria.
And there you go. And directed by Alexander Singer. Part one originally aired on June 19th, 1993, and part two originally aired on September 18th, 1993. So this was the season 6 finale and the season 7 premiere.
About right where it needs to be.
The part one The Borg begin a new offensive against the Federation, but this time they're acting as individuals. Data experiences his first emotions while fighting them. Part one sets up a lot of stuff that part two kind of just fails to complete. Ball a little bit. Yeah. But we do, part one, we get that famous scene at the beginning where Data's in the holodeck and he's playing cards with Isaac Newton and Albert Einstein and Stephen Hawking, and Stephen Hawking played himself, you know.
As the only one that was currently alive at the time.
Yeah, everybody else was dead. But so Data gets called to the bridge, and they answer the stress call. When they get there, it's a science station, and when they get down there, everybody's dead, and the Borg's killed everybody. And they get into this skirmish with the Borg, and they find out that the Borg are acting weird. They're acting differently than what they're used to them. They're calling each other by names and not numbers, and they're acting like they're upset when one of them gets injured. You know, they show sympathy to other Borg when they get injured and things like that. So, and then during that fight, Data gets really enraged, picks one of them up, and starts saying, "Stop, stop, stop," and throws him and gets, you know, angry. So later on in the episode, he's trying to recreate that because he experienced an emotion. He says he experienced an emotion for the first time, but that's not true because Q caused him to have an emotion in season one, you know. And that's when the famous Data laughing scene came from.
Happened on Enterprise A, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Yeah, the tardigrade caused it. It was weird. So, and also in this episode, you know, the Enterprise discovered the transwarp conduits that we saw a lot of in Voyager, that the Borg are traveling through space through transwarp conduits, which I guess is how they were able to get from the Delta Quadrant to the Alpha Quadrant so quickly, because when they first met them, they were in the Delta Quadrant, and then all of a sudden, hey, here they are, they're in the Alpha Quadrant. So what do you guys think of Descent? I guess we'll just do part one and we'll get into part two in just a second. What'd you think of part one, Rick? I know you don't care. You don't really care for this episode.
No, I don't.
Did you like part one when you saw it?
No. Okay. First of all, I don't like lore. And so lore stories just already have a handicap with me. A couple years ago, I guested on another Star Trek show. I'm sorry. I know I didn't tell you. I should have said something beforehand. But
it was just supposed to be a one-time thing.
It was just didn't mean anything really. It was
we were just having a couple of drinks. One thing led to another.
Next thing you know, ripping up the mic.
All we did was talk about Wesley, and I regret it to this day.
And the topic was best two-part episodes in TNG. And so I rewatched all of the TNG two-parters. And hands down, this was the most painful one to watch. And that's saying something, because I think Encounter at Farpoint is just a steaming pile of jellyfish. Something about this episode it's the beginning of the neutering of the Borg. You know, there's a thing that TV shows do, where they come up with a really great villain, and then they make them too strong, and then they have to start defanging them left and right in order to have our heroes win in some believable fashion. You know, the Weeping Angels in Doctor Who, I think, is a great example of that. They were great the first time, but then the more you learn about them, the less they make sense and the less scary they are. And I think, and the Borg are right up there with, they were a marvelous enemy the less we knew about them, but the more we learned, the more convoluted the ways to get away from them became. And, you know, fortunately for Next Gen, this was the last we dealt with the Borg on TV. Then First Contact kind of reinvented the Borg in a much cooler way, except for the Queen, but that's a whole other discussion. Loved Alice Krieger's performance, but just made no sense. And then once you get to Voyager, then the plot yoga necessary to get the Voyager away from the Borg just became insane. And I it never worked for me. And so coupled with the fact that I don't care for Lore, I never liked him as a plot device. I think it's a lazy going back to the well. You know, yeah, it gives Brett Spiner a chance to act all goofy and scary and mustache twirly again, but it just the whole thing just doesn't work for me.
Okay. So I said we were gonna do this in parts, but we'll just talk about the whole thing as one episode. So Lore is kind of in charge of these Borg. He found them. They were kind of broken down because their individuality was a weakness for them or something like that. I don't know.
They didn't know how to function.
Yeah,
functioning as one mind.
So he kind of took over or whatever. And he's controlling Data with emotions. So Lore has that emotions chip, and he is somehow projecting emotions onto Data, but only anger. You know, and he's also blocking his ethical subroutines, which is kind of scary that Data has ethics, but someone can just turn them off. But Lore as a character. So when they introduced Lore in, was it season one when Lore came? Okay, so that was.
I think it might have been two. But I'm not.
All right. Do we care? Data has an evil twin brother. Well, do we have to go any further than that?
The reason I was wondering when it was is because it's a very 1980s science fiction style of storytelling to bring in the evil twin. You know, they do it in soap operas and stuff all the time. And it gave Data a chance, or it gave Brent Spiner a chance to do something other than just be Data. You know, he was able to emote and perform or whatever. The next time that we saw Lore, I can't remember the name of the episode. It was the one where Noonien Soon brought Data to
brothers.
Him and Lore, brothers. That was a great episode. I liked that whole thing. You know, Brent Spiner did a great job in that episode. But then we come to Descent, and all of a sudden Lore is like a Bond villain. And he's not... It could have been anybody. It did not have to be Lore. It could have been any villain that did this thing. And this was supposed to be a way to tie up these loose strings before the end of the series, because they didn't want... I guess they didn't want Lore out there as a storytelling device when the movies start coming along, because the fans would have been like, oh, Lore's going to be in the next movie. No, you know, we're kind of sort of going to kill him. But yeah, I did not like the way that Lore kind of got, his storylines got tied up in this episode, because I felt like it was just not a fitting end to what we saw in that other episode. Cause that other episode was really good. And this one was not. Or at least the Lore part of this episode was not good. Chris, what'd you think?
One that, like Rick, I have very little Lore tolerance. It, to me, was ludicrous on the face of it the first time I ever heard of it. And I was not a Next Gen fan. That was at the time, you know, I was like, this is not the original series. This is blasphemy. And then I heard that he had his evil twin Skippy, and I was just like, this show. So that puts Lore in context for me, for the audience. So take everything I say with a grain of salt. The one thing I remember about this episode is the one thing I was talking about before with Iborg. When Nechayev reams Picard out saying, you had the enemy, the greatest enemy that the Federation has ever known. You could have wiped them out, yet you decided to what? Give them some kind of spark of humanity? What kind of bullshit is that? You are now under direct orders. If you find a way to destroy the Borg, destroy them. Worry about your conscience later. And that always stuck out to me. That was so badass, I thought it was Jellicoe that said it in some context. So it was nice, because I hadn't seen... I told you, Sean, when you wanted me to appear on the show, I don't think I've ever seen Descent I didn't even know what Descent was. I had to look it up and then start watching it. I said, oh, it's this one, and it ends up with Lore on the Planet, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't realize that that scene with Necheyev was in the beginning of this. So I got about 50 minutes before we had to get on mic, and I found the first part pretty compelling. But I think I punched out right at the right time, because it was when Data was talking to the Borg that they had in the brig. And he presses some magic tech on his arm, and all of a sudden Data says, yes, I would kill Geordi to feel emotions again. Mm-hmm. And then literally on my screen at that point, a messenger thing popped up of you saying, I'm logging on now. And I said, okay, I can't watch anymore. And I think maybe, like I said, the perfect moment to punch out of that episode. So I don't know. As far as Next Gen goes, they tried to do something that I guess built on their own mythology and call back to other stuff that happened in the series, which was still, correct me if I'm wrong, a fairly rare occurrence for Star Trek at this point.
Yeah.
So I kind of appreciated that part of it. And
unless it was Q or Lwaxana, they love to bring them back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Lwaxana is always fun, and Q is always, John Delancey's always is great, but yeah, I think she is. But as someone who's not really a Next Gen fan, I felt myself more vested in this episode because I remembered I Borg. So it gave me a frame of reference where I could say, oh, well, I know this little bit of it. I can build on that.
John, what about you?
It's my general review. I liked episode one way more than I liked episode two. I thought, kind of like what Rick said, like it kind of set up all these questions or threads that it didn't really, at least to me, didn't fully deliver on. I mean, like, I feel like it answered the question. I actually liked, I have mixed feelings about Lore. Like, I liked him in concept, I guess, but he always felt like just wasted potential. He always felt like an arch enemy that was not equal to the task of taking down his opposite. Like, it wasn't even, you know, it's like he wants to be the Joker to Data's Batman, but he's really more like the Riddler. I'm like, yeah. And there's no excuse for that because he's, you know, he's his twin. He's him and more, or at least he should have been. So yeah, so that's my general context for how I feel about Lore. So how did Lore end up meeting? How did this one super unique creature in the universe end up running into these other super unique creatures in the universe? Oh, well, they just bumped into them.
Because show.
In all of space. just exactly. Ran. I'm like, did you meet on a planet? Were you on a ship? Yeah, just, you know, I stumbled across them, I think is what he said. Oh, well, okay. Sure, fine. Stumbled across them. So, here are my two questions. One, is the idea that the Data experienced those emotions because all of the Borg were emitting some kind of emotion pulse? This is what, excuse me, my theory is Lore is trying to find Data. And so he's having them attack bases that are near, that are in the vicinity of the Enterprise, so the Enterprise will respond. And if Data gets close enough to one of these Borg who's emitting the emotion pulse, we'll call it, he'll experience emotion, and that's, you know, and then he'll reel them in.
Mm-hmm.
And so ultimately, this is all a trap for Lore to get Data. Is that right? Or am I just making that do that?
That's part of it. I never really grasped his entire plan.
That's my
thing. That was part of it.
What the f*** is his plan? What is
he trying to do? He wants to have the Borg Collective not assimilate, but destroy. He just wants to destroy everything.
Everything.
He wants to take over the universe.
Yeah. All organic life in all of Star Trek.
Well, basically the Federation. He blames Picard and the Enterprise for kind of turning Data against him and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's but I never really grasped the entire plan. Part of it was just get Data to come here because he's my brother and I want him to join me. Or whatever. So to do that, I have to turn him bad.
You're looking into the mechanics of that plan are almost as ridiculous as the mechanics of Shinzon's plan in Nemesis to put some kind of B4 parts on a planet where the Enterprise will just happen to pass by and just happen to pick up on the signal and just happen to go investigate and just happen to bring this entity onto the ship. And It's convoluted, like Sean said, because show, because movie, because they just wanted to tell this story, and so we need to get there somehow. So
that's what I'm saying. Like I will acknowledge that it is ridiculous that he happened to run into these evolved Borg, but it's fine. I can swallow that. That's fine. But he needs to have at least. He needs to believe that he has a plan or acknowledge that he doesn't have a plan. But him fronting like he has a plan when Hugh calls him out for not having a plan, like, mm-hmm. I feel like you need to go one way or the other. And like, yeah, it came pretty clear to us, pretty obvious. Like, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Well, let me ask you this. This is something that I kind of dealt with at the end of this episode. You guys remember the episode, God, what's the episode where...
I don't know episode names.
The episode where the guy wants to take Data back
to... Data to the future?
No, he wants to take Data and he wants to break him down and make other androids. And they have that trial where they have to decide...
Measure of a Man?
Yeah, Measure of a Man, yeah. And so they came to the conclusion that Data he has rights and he can make decisions about what happens to himself and all that. But at the end of this episode, Data just turns Lore off and disassembles him. Lore doesn't want to be disassembled. Does Lore not have the right to say, I don't want to be disassembled? Why can't he just go to prison like every other criminal? Did Data have the right to basically kill his brother like that?
Well, you know what? Let's say that as next of kin, he got to make end of life decisions.
Well, he wasn't dying. So, I mean, that's just something that crossed my mind when Data comes in and says, "I have disassembled Lore, and he won't be able to bother anybody again." I'm like. Didn't we have an entire episode where they determined that they can't do that to you, but you made the decision to do that to another android? I don't know.
I just feel like this one, they were looking for a two-part finale / season opener. So they said, okay, what are our most sort of popular things that we can explore? Well, obviously the Borg, Best of Both Worlds, sort of set the precedent for that. And then they thought, well, okay, but Lore. We could get Lore back in. It'd be like, you know, like you got your chocolate and my peanut butter, two great tastes that taste great. No, they didn't really.
We haven't released a Lore action figure in a while. Let's make one where he's wearing all black.
But it felt to me like they were looking for like a stunt plot as a finale / opener. Rather than thinking of something that was actually compelling. Because the show was winding down. But, I mean, it was also at that time, the show seemed to me to be on Data overdrive. Like everything seemed to be centered. Like Time's Arrow was another one that was the two-parter that was the season finale, season opener, which it was Data lost in the past, right? So it seems like they were going back to the Data well a lot. Data was almost like like Spock, almost like too much already. There are other things besides Vulcans in the universe. Let's explore some of those things and make some new mythology. But instead, the show had become so popular, I feel like they were just then not so much resting on their laurels, but even going back to the well? Or autopilot? I don't know how to describe it because again, I'm not versed enough in Next Gen to know what they did too much. It just seems to me that this was obvious. So why not just go for the low hanging fruit?
They kind of got into a rule that kind of like Doctor Who has the Daleks at least once every season. Then Next Generation kind of had a Borg episode every season. Kind of a Q episode every season, you know, that kind of thing. Lore didn't come back that often. There was only three lore episodes that I can remember, and this was one of them. Well, four if you count the two-parter as being two episodes. But how do you guys think that this is going to play into Picard? Because Hugh's coming back, so...
See, I didn't even actually... As you know, I often, not always, avoid... trailers and spoilers and like behind the scenes prequel news and all this stuff. So I didn't even know. I mean, I kind of figured since you're like, okay, we're watching these episodes about the Borg to prepare for Picard. Yeah. So I figured, okay, well, I guess the Borg are going to be in Picard.
But well,
I didn't know.
Yeah. I didn't know Hugh and
Hugh specifically.
Yeah, Hugh and Seven of Nine are both going to be in Picard. And Seven looks like she's basically not Borg anymore. And
well, she still has her tech.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she's got certain things that she has to have just to stay alive now. But she's not acting Borgified at all. She's acting like she's kind of reverted back to her human self for the most part.
How this is 20 years? Like it's supposed
15
to be
years.
15 years. Okay. So yeah, I mean she shouldn't be acting that way. I would call shenanigans if she's still acting like you know.
Listen, if Berman was writing the show, she would still be acting like that in the cast.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Then I would call shenanigans. And again, I would point out I quit watching Voyager.
Yeah.
For reasons.
Let me name off some trivia and production things that came about. Oh, I did want to mention Ensign Tate. What the actual F? Why? Why? Season 7, are you introducing characters, named characters, that have a lot to do with this episode that we're never going to see again? I did not understand that. Guys.
Because sometimes a black woman needs to put a white man in his place. That's why.
Yeah. The production reason that Ensign Tate was there was because it was supposed to be Reginald Barkley, and he had something else to do. So they couldn't get him. So they made up another character, and it was Ensign Tate. Which, I mean, it wouldn't have really made a whole lot of sense for Reg to all of a sudden be a bridge officer. Because he's been in engineering his entire career on the Enterprise.
Well, they said they left behind a skeleton crew. So
skeleton crew, yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Well, yeah, Crusher's not supposed to be captain of the ship, but she was in command of this. And they brought back metaphasic shielding. That was one of the few times that Star Trek, or at least the Next Generation, did that because they had. It was earlier in season six? Rick, are you there?
I'm here. Yeah.
Was it season 6 where they introduced the metaphasic shielding?
That was the episode was Clues. Yeah. I don't recall when it was offhand.
Yeah, I think it was season 6. So then they brought it back here and they used it to be able to hide out in that star's corona. So Stephen Hawking was on the Paramount lot for the video release of his film A Brief History of Time, and he came to the Star Trek set, and he asked the staff if they could take him out of his chair and put him in the captain's chair, which they did.
Oh, nice.
Then he did that scene in the holodeck. The Borg building is the Brandeis Barden Institute. It was also used as Camp Khidmer in Star Trek VI. It's most famous for being the command center in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Although many Borg appear in the final scene, only 11 extras were actually used because they didn't have the wardrobe for more than that. And they were multiplied by using split screen overlays. Two starship naming firsts are in this episode. The USS Crazy Horse is the first starship named after a Native American, and the USS Gorkon is the first one named after a non-human individual, Klingon Chancellor Gorkon. In this episode, Data says, "I believe I've experienced my first emotion." However, in Deja Q, he experiences a brief moment of laughter, which he described as a wonderful feeling. Geordi mentions that while attempting to swim at Davala Lake, Data sank to the bottom. But in Star Trek Insurrection, it is shown that Data has been designed to act as a flotation device.
I presume that he got upgraded after his experience of sinking to the bottom.
I guess, yeah.
Geordi upgraded himself, again. Right?
Yeah.
Sure. And if you go back to our discussion of Fade In,
yeah,
you'll hear my opinion on that particular deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we linger on the data emotion thing for a second?
Okay, go ahead.
Well, this is what I want to ask you guys, as you know, like Next Gen was your Star Trek basically, and Data's journey is one of the key sort of elements of the entire series. So when they were finally exploring this in a more meaningful way, at least in the first half or two thirds of this episode, were you guys like really like, yes, this is the shit. Like, yeah, like this is what we've been sort of waiting for this character to evolve like this. And did that make the inevitable ending of this all the more of a letdown?
For me personally, I wasn't like, yeah, because he was only experiencing negative emotions, and I figured that it was not going to. I didn't think that it would stay that way. So the fact that he wasn't he was only experiencing anger and rage, and it was only around when he was around these other Borg. I think even watching it the first time, I figured there was, you know, some kind of trick to it. And so I didn't get excited about it, nor was I particularly let down when he went back to being Data, because I liked Data. So I was,
yeah,
you know,
and I knew that there was a movie coming, and they were going to want everything to be a clean slate when they started the movie. So I knew they weren't going to go. He wasn't going to go through some major transformation, because Star Trek has this assumption that when their movies come out, that all of a sudden all these people that have never seen Star Trek are going to come see their movies. So they try to make their movies so that they make them so that if you've never seen Star Trek before, you can enjoy this. So they're going to try to make it so that you're not going to come to the movie and have a bunch of questions to ask. He's an android, you know, but he's got all these emotions. So
I got a kick out of the fact that at the end of Descent, we see the emotion chip, and it's about the size of a SIM card. And then in Generations, it's like the size of a Hershey bar.
Yeah, but it was also damaged. It got damaged when Data shot Lore with the phaser, is what they said in the stuff that I read. But yeah, they never actually said that in the episode. But it was.
If they didn't say it specifically, they strongly implied.
Well, he did say it was damaged. He said, "I'm happy to say that it's been damaged." Yeah.
Now that may be the explanation for, you know, sorry, Lore, we've got to shut you down so I can dig that thing out of your skull that I want.
And I don't count Q making Data feel emotion. That doesn't count.
He experienced an emotion.
Because Q made it, but that, you know, then you get philosophical. Is it an emotion if someone is like if I do drugs and it makes me happy, is that an emotion?
Well, is it an emotion if it comes from a computer chip?
Okay, but the thing is that you're saying that it's not an emotion because Q manipulated it out of him, yet the anger was manipulated by Lore's magic tech.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I think the emotion
coming from Q would be more genuine than the emotion coming from a computer chip.
Yeah, probably.
It's all true. I'm just trying to
disrupt your blooper finding.
Because I mean, technically, Q could wave his hand, and Data could have become a real boy.
He could have. Didn't he actually do that one? Didn't he turn him human?
No, he was going to, and Data told him not to. I mean, it wasn't Q; it was Riker when Riker had the Q powers.
Oh right, yeah.
Riker was going to turn him into a human, and he said, "No, I don't want it that way. I want to earn it.
I want the Borg Queen to do it for me."
Yeah, I want to have a real arm. The last one is that Lore's final scene is similar to the deactivation of the HAL 9000 in 2001 A Space Odyssey. Indeed, both characters start appealing to the compassion of the person trying to deactivate them after previously threatening that person, and both pronounce their final words in a deep, slow voice as their systems fail.
I'll say this for Lore. I prefer Lore infinitely over B4.
I think that if they hadn't have killed Lore, that we wouldn't have ever had a B4. I think they would have brought Lore back in that. I think Nemesis would have been about Lore.
I would have hated that too, but I would have hated it less.
And either way, Rick, they would have sung show tunes. So you're in the clouds.
And on that note, that's going to pretty much do it for this episode. I want to thank everybody for being here. Rick, thanks for being here tonight.
My pleasure.
You want to let everybody know where they can find you?
No, I don't want anyone to find me right now.
Okay.
look for Starbase Command coming soon to a podcast catcher near you.
All right. Chris, what about you? Where can we find you?
You can find me on the Quantum Leap podcast. It's quantumleappodcast.com. If you're a fan of Quantum Leap or Quantum Leap curious, we're the place to go. You can find us anywhere you get all of your fine podcasts.
Quantum Leap curious. All right, John, where can we find you?
I only leapt the one time. You can find me
on... it's not leapt, it's leaped.
That's the way I did it. Sorry. You know what? I'm not sorry.
He was young. He needed the money.
Game show. Trivia and Wordplay Cosplay. See? Yeah, all that podcast cosplay is a big hit. It is the Trivia and Word Game. Trivia and Wordplay Podcast.
Mind is going.
Cosmic Potato Network. It is a well-known fact that after about 11 o'clock Eastern, all the wires get crossed and loopy when John is podcasting.
A few notes to remind you about. You can find all of our episodes on our new website at CosmicPotatoNetwork.com. If you want to get in touch with us, just search for The Landing Party on Facebook or Twitter. We're on both. You can send us a voicemail or a text message to area code 205-642-8380, and you can send us an email to landingpartypod@gmail.com. If you want to keep up with what we're doing, then I'll tell you that next month we're going to be watching and reviewing All Good Things, as well as the final short trek before the premiere of Picard. So join us then, and until then, remember, there are no other emotions.
Thank you for joining us for The Landing Party, a Star Trek after show. You can contact us on Facebook or Twitter, and you can send us a voicemail or text message to 205-642-8380. Help the show grow by subscribing to us on your favorite podcatcher and leaving us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also share our latest episodes on your social media. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of CBS or Star Trek. No infringement of copyrighted material owned by CBS and Paramount Pictures is intended. Be sure to join us again next time on The Landing Party, a Star Trek after show.
I would have hated that too, but I would have hated it less.
And either way, Rick, they would have sung show tunes, so you're in the class.
All right. That's pretty much going to do it for this episode. I want to thank you. Yes.
I'm gonna jump in as a producer here for just 1 second. Chris, give me that show tunes line again.
Okay. Either way, they would have sung. God damn it. Either way, they would have sung show tunes. So you're in the clear, Rick.
And Sean, you say, and on that note.
And on that note. That's going to pretty much do it for this episode.